it's a late service, so it's great to have you here. It's great to have you here on this first Sunday of 2009. I want to especially thank Kathy Scott, our choir director, who gave our special music today. The person who was supposed to got sick, and so she did a last minute for us. But it's great that she could do that for us. Also, I wanted to thank Amber Days, our band, 633 band. I asked them to do that song. I think it's a wonderful song for us at Christmas. And we, as the morning services, had a chance to hear that. Although I may be in trouble, the drummer, Justin, said, you know, Pastor, if you're going to have us do Monday morning or Sunday morning, we need a raise. I just want you to know. So our budget may be hit next year by the drummer. He wants some money. Today we come and we celebrate Epiphany. It's kind of a fancy word, and many of us probably know what it is. It's a day when we remember the three kings, the three wise men. Those visitors from the east came to see the Christ child and that it was revealed to them, a revelation to them, that this baby was a king, and this baby was more than just a child born in an oppressed country to a nobody couple. We come to remember that revelation, that light coming to them, that aha moment that they had in the country they were from, but also when they came to see the Christ child, and also when they had the dreams God gave them. And I figure, don't you, first Sunday of the year, it's an important Sunday for us as a people of faith, as all people, and I figure as a pastor, the first Sunday of the year, I ought to say something profound to begin with, don't you think? Yes? Okay, well, here we go. Profound, here we come. How many Methodist ministers does it take to change a light bulb? Seriously. Jim, how many? Oh. None. It's a trustee's job. He's a trustee. He ought to know that. Didn't want to say that, huh? Oh, thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Okay. How many Methodist ministers does it take to change a light bulb? None. We only work on Sunday mornings and there's no time to do it then. How many Methodist ministers does it take to change a light bulb?
Zero.
Nine. Two, to look at the scriptural images of light and darkness. Two, to comment on how the darkness is part of our theology and we need to keep the darkness. Two, to comment on how light should break into the darkness and how the light bulb should be changed. And two, to break up the fight between those that are arguing about our theologies. And one to change a light bulb. Finally, how many ministers does it take to change a light bulb? None. We don't like the change. How about you? And I know you're saying to yourself, our pastor has sunk to new lows, right? Starting a sermon with changing a light bulb, any kind of joke like that, but changing a light bulb joke. But give me a moment. Because how many of you like the change? And at this beginning of the year, how many of us even say, you know, we do need the change, but we make resolutions about changing, but how many times do we take that to heart? When we come this season, the season after Christmas and into the new year, we come in the season of light, and we love the light, don't we? Many of you probably have Christmas trees still up, and you love to put the Christmas lights on them and see the light, and you like to shut the lights off in the room and turn the Christmas tree lights on and sit there as a family. I mean, it's beautiful to see that and to know that light. How many of you, I know we used to do that as a family. You drive around the neighborhood to see all the lights that are out there, the decorations. It's wonderful to see. Go downtown Chicago or any major urban area to see the lights of what they've done. We love to see those kinds of lights. And even when it comes to Christmas and Christmas Eve, we love to hear the stories of who Jesus is, the light of the world. And we love to come on Christmas Eve. And as we dim the lights and shut the lights off here, we love to light our candle, don't we? And to know that we celebrate what life is about. And yet as we come as a people to celebrate Christmas, do we really want to have that season as part of our heart? Or do we see it as kind of a cultural celebration in which we ought to do things? Or perhaps it is a significant religious celebration to remember Jesus, and it's a good time to go to church, but we don't take that sense of light serious in our lives. A light that offers sometimes to reveal and to change things for us. Because we don't like the light. Sometimes we like the darkness. The Gospel of John, he shares with us, as he talks about the Word become flesh, In John 3:19, he says, you know, the light came into the world, but men instead loved the darkness. They loved the darkness. Even as the light of Christ shined. And I wonder if we are those who like, perhaps even love the darkness. And hold on to that. Cling to that. And let me clarify for a moment. Often when we think of darkness, we think of evil, don't we? Those dark people who are making evil plans out there. We think of that kind of darkness and we say, we're not those people. We don't plan to do evil, dark things. But yet, do we let the light of Christ come to us and reveal the brokenness or the hurt or the things in our life that hold us back? Isn't it easy to say, you know, we don't want to change, even though perhaps it would do us good to change. Sometimes even we have things in our life that are painful or difficult, but we become very comfortable with them, haven't we? We know how to do anger, don't we? We know how to do sadness. We know how to do, perhaps, resentment. We know how to do, perhaps, addictions. We know how to do, perhaps, bad habits. And they become comfortable like old friends. And do we really want the light to shine on that and to change us? Do we really want to change the light bulb? Or we don't want to change. We don't want the light to come to us. We like the darkness because it's very comfortable. How do we take serious what it says for us to be the light of the world? This morning's gospel lesson, we hear, you know, the revelation, the epiphany comes with light, a star from the heavens. The star shone, and where did the star shine? It shined on a stable, a barn, if you will, and it shone on a child. A child, you know, a possibility, a new beginning. Isn't it interesting when God wanted to really get our attention? He sent a child. He sent a child with a new vision, a new dream, a new possibility. For those of you, most of you, not all, but most of you who have children, you know, when you have that baby, what's that like? The new possibility, the new vision, the dreams you may have for that child, the dreams you may have as a family together, what's it like? Isn't it often those children bring out that sense of hope, light and possibility when we see them and when we know them, just like the Christ child? It is amazing what a child can do in a group of people or when you hold a baby. And even though sometimes, although child raising is really easy, isn't it? No, it can be difficult, it can be painful, it can be hard. We know those things, but also it can be amazing. It can be amazing. It invites us into a new way of seeing, a new relationship sometimes with life itself. Back in November, I had the privilege, and we as a community had a privilege at this service, to baptize a young boy named Tyler. Right after we did the baptism, I went to Tyler's house, their parents, Darcy and Rich, to visit with them and talk about the church, talk about a baptism a little bit, to get to know them a little more. We talked about some work things. Rich is a carpenter, a union carpenter. We talked about some of the struggles with work these days. I just visited, and I shared my family, shared their family, and things in the world that were going on. And they said something that I thought was really funny. And those of you that know me, you remember, you know how I laugh? As soon as I hear something funny, I go to a decibel of like 15 right away. I mean, I don't mean to do it, but I laugh loud right away. And Tyler had been asleep, but guess what? That stupid pastor woke him up. So he's crying in his room, and so Darcy goes to get him. And he's all blurry-eyed, and he comes in, and he looks, and he sees me, and, you know, new guy in the house. What do you do with that? So with all my experience and education degree that I've got, you know, I know exactly what to do with a child who's a little upset. What do? I play peekaboo. And I thought for a moment it was going to be touch and go, because he didn't respond right away. But he smiled. He chuckled. He chuckled some more. Full-throated laugh, and then finally, you know that laugh that a baby gets, that hysterical thing? You know, they can't stop, they get going. He was there. He was there. I kept playing peekaboo, and finally I said, can I hold it? You know, that's the only reason I went, to be honest with you, not to get to know the parents. I wanted to hold the baby again. Can I hold it? And sure. So I put him on my lap, had one arm around him, He kept looking up at me and looking at his parents because it's a new position. But as he looked up at me, I booed him again, popped in his face, and laughed, and laughed louder. And finally, he just full-throated laughter. I mean, you know, I was going to stay the night and do that whole night. The parents were about to kick me out, but I was ready to stay because of the gift of that kind of laughter, that invitation into life. Have you done that? Have you been there? Isn't that amazing? That simple invitation to life that a baby brings us to. And when we think about ourselves as followers of Jesus Christ, who came as a baby, we are invited to have that same kind of joy and spirit and invitation into new beginnings, into new life, into perhaps God's dream for us as we commit ourselves to what the light of Christ is. I mean, we all have those moments sometimes, holding a baby, that invitation into new life in Christ. Some of you at the soup kitchen, you know, if you've been to the soup kitchen and served, that new light, that invitation into actually helping people who are hungry. Mission trips, those of you who have been on mission trips, that invitation, that kind of, that ministry and that light of Christ, caring for a family member or a friend who is ill or sick or who is just in need of a cup of coffee, that invitation into that, or being part of a church or a group that invites people to know love and grace. When you make a difference, it is amazing how we are invited into that life. And yet so often, we take this season of light and we stop at Epiphany. Okay, it's a revealed to us. We realize who Jesus is. Now let's move on. How is it we can take what God offers us in this season of light and grace? What is God's dream for us? You know, just like when a child laughs, laughter invites us into moments of grace, Christmas grace, it invites us not just to enjoy that, but perhaps to take account what our future is and how we are living our life now. God in this child, Jesus Christ, has a dream for all of us and always has, but sometimes do we not? Instead of being part of that dream of love and grace and really working at it, we sell out for the two little dreams that the world offers around us. We say that's all there is. We sell out to that and don't give our time and energy and effort to what is. Or perhaps we say it's a really good idea, that life stuff, that love stuff, there's nothing wrong with that. But you know how the world is. And so fatalistically, with fatalism, we say, you know, what can we do? It's a great story, but how can we live that in our the story of the wise men in the Epiphany asks us to take serious doing things different, to choose another way. Think about them. Think about their story for a moment. Three wise men, however many there were, wise men, kings, astrologers, those who knew the wisdom of their society, of their culture. You know, they had it there. They knew there were wonderful things in their country, in their nation. And yet they saw a star, and where did they go to see God? They went to a foreign country. They realized God's work isn't all in their nation, but it can be someplace else as well. And so they chose another way. When they get there, here's a poor kid. What does he, you know? What kind of gift? You've traveled so many miles. What should you give a child like that? These guys understood, perhaps, that their world wasn't tied up in the wealth that they had and the gold, in the gold and the myrrh and the frankincense that was expensive stuff. They were so generous they gave it to this child that had nothing. It wouldn't have mattered one way or another. And yet they understood you do it a different way out of that sense of generosity. Finally, when they go home, they didn't go back to see the king. They didn't go back to see King Herod, who really wanted to see them. According to all diplomacy, you should have done that. That king gets upset at you, you may be in trouble. But they knew they needed to do things another way. So God in a dream told them and responded, and they responded and went home by another way. As we come here today, what would it mean for us to really choose another way? Not a radical way like we've fallen off the cliff, but what would it mean for us to take the steps to fully live the gospel of Christ in our lives? What would it mean for us to look at our way of life, our lifestyle, and say, what we're doing isn't quite getting it for us? And we need to do some things differently. Two or three weeks ago, I shared with you how Jesus is like an economist. Does anybody remember that one? Well, that's encouraging. Okay, here we go. You're trying to say, and if you remember that, there was an economist who was talking about China and their economy, and he said, you know, it's time the Chinese people take the burden of consuming. He didn't say the gift, how wonderful consuming is. Do you remember that now? Oh, yes, thank you very much. The burden of consuming. Well, this week, I heard an interview of a banker, an international banker. And I figured these days, with the economy the way it is, international bankers are keeping their heads down, wouldn't you think? You know, they're not talking to anybody. But this gentleman, a gentleman from, I believe it's India, but I'm not sure. Prabhu Guptara, is that an Indian name? Mr. Guptara is an international banker. Works it in the field, but he talked about the crisis we had in terms of our economy, and he was asked, what's the cause of this? What are some of the things that we have a problem with? And he said, we've lost our way as people, and we've bought into the culture of debt. And he's not talking America, he's talking the world, international banker. He said, we've bought into the culture of debt, and then he says, we've lost our faith in God. This is a banker. And not faith in terms of creed, what we say our faith is, but we've lost our trust in one that's greater than ourselves. And we've begun to have faith, begun to have trust in the things that we can have and possess and borrow money for. This is a banker. When he was asked what his religious affiliation is, he said he's a Hindu follower of Jesus. And where he got his strength these days in the crisis that he had, he got his strength in trusting in God and in the teachings of Jesus Christ. Trust in God. He says we've lost our way in trusting that which is bigger than ourselves. What would it mean for us to, again, look at who we are and what we are trusting in our life and commit to begin to take the steps to trust in God? That which is bigger than we can own. That which is bigger than we can control. And give ourselves to that. We as followers of Jesus Christ, Christian followers of Jesus Christ, we say it is in Christ that we do that.